UCI in Irvine, 88.9 FM. For this next hour program, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Good morning. It's time now for Talking Animals on KUCI. that was Matthew Sweet with a song called The Big Cats of Shambhala. Could there be a more spot-on song for a show that will spend time talking about the cats of Shambhala, by the way? Anyway, as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, streaming live, as always, on the internet at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole enchilada, the whole nine yards is broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine, home, I hasten to tell you both, for an animal-related show, it's important to point out, this is the home of the anteaters, folks. Those mighty anteaters. That's right. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you, for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824. 949-UCI-KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love to get calls. We get lonely down here at the old KUCI studios otherwise. But you can also instant message us via AOL Instant Messenger, the screen name, perhaps not surprisingly, Talking Animals. Other good, but perhaps less immediate ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com or contacting us via our cool website, talkinganimals.net. Again, make no mistake, that's right, it's .net, folks. Also, before I move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another smart, stimulating, smoking edition of the Serena Sharp Show. Yes, we do love alliteration here. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources, but we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a pretty spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our nifty website, again, talkinganimals.net, where nearly every show we've ever broadcast, folks, is archived right there for the listening, for your listening pleasure, perhaps even. But clearly the heart of the program is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today, our guest is Tippi Hedren, the veteran actress perhaps best known for starring in Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, but for more than three decades has operated the Shambhala Preserve, an 80-acre facility in Acton, California, for endangered big cats and other animals. Not coincidentally, perhaps, she's also a longtime animal activist, frequently advocating new or stronger legislation to protect captive wildlife and other animals as well, in can hunts, etc. And she still does acting pretty regularly too, folks. Don't forget that. So there'll be much to discuss when Tippi Hedren joins us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Of course, she'll be joining us live, and we will take listener calls, 949-824-5824. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news, and I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals. Not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss. Announcements, maybe there's a fundraiser or some notable event coming up for some animal-oriented organization that you're part of. Any observations you have of the animal world. Any stories, news stories or others that you might have spotted in the animal world. All of that would be most welcome and more, frankly. Call us up, 949-824-5824. Looking at your phone pad differently and yet the same. 949-UCI-KUCI. So turning now to interesting and or important developments recently in animal news. Typically these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight. And, he said with unjustified optimism, and you'll have to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, having said that, Let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, let's dive in with kind of a follow-up on that wild, gruesome attack by those chimpanzees a few weeks back. So I'm just going to read this little portion of a story from the LA Times Thursday. Chimpanzees who viciously attacked a man last month at an animal sanctuary near Bakersfield managed to open the locked gates to their enclosure, according to a report released Wednesday by the Kern County Sheriff's Department. The report, which offered the first full account of the March 3 attack that left a West Covina man maimed and near death, came as prosecutors announced that the operators of the Animal Haven Ranch would not face criminal charges. Virginia Brower, who owns the ranch with her husband Ralph, was cleaning the cages that morning and left two of the three gates within the chimpanzee compound unlocked, investigators said. The four chimps pushed those doors open. At the third gate, authorities said, one of the chimps pulled out a 4-inch steel pin that locked the door in place. Animal behavior experts consulted by the district attorney believe that the chimps were determined to get out of the enclosure because they were jealous of the attention that LaDonna and St. James Davis were giving to their own chimp, Mo, who lives at the sanctuary. The couple had gone to the private sanctuary south of Lake Isabella that day with a cake to celebrate the chimp's birthday. Wildlife experts said Wednesday that they were not surprised the chimps got free. Quote, chimps are incredibly smart animals. They manipulate things all the time. They're thinkers, said Jenny McNary, curator of mammals at the Los Angeles Zoo. They have the ability to reason and figure things out. They can handle things with their fingers just like we can. It's certainly within their ability to unlock a lock, with a key. So it goes on from there, but just wanted to follow that story at least through what may or may not be its conclusion, but certainly a significant resolution at the moment. And here's another one we've talked about a few times here, Talking Animals. Headline, online hunting firm is now the quarry. Dateline from Sacramento. So far, John Lockwood has had only two customers for his new internet-based business, yet lawmakers in California, 14 other states, and Congress are moving to shut it down. Lockwood operates a website, liveshot.com, that for a few hundred dollars lets anyone with access to a computer shoot and kill a variety of animals roaming a fenced ranch in Texas. A rifle, video camera, and computer are mounted on a stand at the ranch at a spot frequented by deer, antelope, and sheep. From thousands of miles away via computer, a person can control the camera and gun, firing with the click of the mouse. Even if Lockwood doesn't yet have customers lining up around the block, the mere notion that a venue exists for remote-controlled killing has triggered a backlash of disgust, compelling lawmakers and forging an unlikely coalition of big-game hunters and animal rights activists. Lockwood's venture has offended sensibilities even in Texas, where many private hunting ranches promise clients they can bag exotic trophy animals such as impala and wildebeest. Quote, it's not hunting, said Kirby L. Brown, executive vice president of the Texas Wildlife Association, which represents landowners, hunters, and conservationists. It falls off the end of the ethical chart. Scholars such as Dale Jameson, a professor of environmental studies and philosophy at New York University, also see Lockwood's business as an understandable if disturbing extension of a computer society where popular video games such as Grand Theft Auto let players pretend to kill police officers. Jameson said people feel threatened by Lockwood's business as much as they do violent video games because both involve an unseemly delight in killing. Lockwood's business, he said, undermines the central argument in defense of hunting, that the joy of the sport comes in the chase and being attuned to the natural world, but not in the kill itself. Quote, if you look at this as being a continuum or slippery slope, said Jameson, you have people who enjoy the act of killing and destruction in video games. You have people who enjoy killing animals over the internet. But, of course, the next step is that people start killing people over the internet. That's the worry. And the story goes on from there, and it's quite a bit of depth. But you know, as it kind of alludes to here, but deeper into the story, even fairly avid hunters and other groups have sort of lined up with animal rights groups of various kinds to say this is just crazy. We got to stop this guy. So, yay. All right, I want to put this sort of in the top of the rotation because many, many weeks we don't get to this, but it's so important, and I know we've talked about it fairly frequently here in Talking Animals, but for a good reason. And that's, I'm referring to the Animal Rescue Site, which is a website. The address is theanimalrescuesite.com. And if you just go there, and in fact do so every day, just click on the section that says Feed an Animal in Need. Through an arrangement they have with corporate sponsors and advertisers, that indeed releases funds to feed or otherwise care for abandoned, neglected animals at various facilities. So it's pretty cool. There's no catch. There's no downside. And again, you can go every day. You can't go more. I mean, you can't click more than once and have it work. But once a day, you can and should go. So just a reminder about that. I think we should jump right into our animal quiz because we may be running a little shorter on time than usual, and we want to jump into the Comedy Corner and then, of course, welcome our guest, Tippi Hedren, momentarily here on Talking Animals. So, all right, so this is going to be yet another true-false question. So even if you don't know and you call in and guess, 50-50 chance, and why is that even worth dialing up? Glad you asked. Because we got prizes, folks. Now, pay close attention because these prizes not only would come into play if you're the first person to correctly answer the quiz question, but later on, towards the end of the show, when we play Name That Animal Tune, if you were the first person to identify that that animal tune, you would also have your choice of these prizes, which range from the DVD by Triumph the Insult Comic Dog, various Talking Animals merch, as we say in the concert biz, including Talking Animals t-shirts, Talking Animals sweatshirts, Talking Animals coffee mugs. We also have books of various kinds, including Providence of a Sparrow by Chris Chester, the guest we had on the show a few weeks ago, award-winning, acclaimed, really beautiful, well-written book. Of course, I always delight in mentioning Shirley MacLaine's book is also a potential prize, and that's because, yes, it was co-written by her dog, folks. And what other books? We've got Meatless Meals for Working People, and we've got a sort of other things. We've got t-shirts from other animal organizations, including a Paws t-shirt with a cool little drawing of an elephant saying elephants don't belong in circuses. We've got cat toys, dog leashes, assorted other things, handcrafted necklaces with animal charms. I mean, quite an array of things. So hopefully there's something there that grabs your fancy and to compel you to call in 949-824-5824 with your answer to this true-false question and sort of as a nod to Tippi Hedren and talking mostly about cats, big cats, other cats perhaps, I thought we'd select this one. All right, listen up. Here we go. The fishing cat taps the water gently to attract the fish with the ripples. Once the fish comes to investigate, the cat grabs the fish with its long claws and throws it onto the bank. True or false? 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI. One more time. The fishing cat taps the water gently to attract a fish with the ripples. Once the fish comes to investigate, the cat grabs the fish with its long claws and throws it onto the bank. True or false? 949-824-5824. Continuing a couple more minutes here with our animal news. This is sort of local, but again, most of our local things are selected because they have larger implications. I'm just going to read a bit of this. This too is from the LA Times. As several endangered brown pelicans recovered Monday from slashing injuries to their pouches, federal authorities said they would launch an investigation into the attacks, and a reward leading to the capture of those responsible grew to $6,000. The U.S. Humane Society said Monday that it would add $2,500 to the reward fund. The announcement came shortly after the Wetlands and Wildlife Care Center, a rescue organization based in Huntington Beach, offered a $3,500 reward for information. Quote, the assumption here is that this is a case of animal cruelty, said Paul Bruce, a program coordinator with the Humane Society's West Coast Regional Office. Meanwhile, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service said Monday that investigators would be assigned to the case in the next few days to try to learn more about the incident. Birds with torn pouches have been found between Dana Point and Huntington Beach, most with long cuts parallel to their bills. We don't have an open case yet, but we're looking into it, said Mary Palladini, a supervisor special agent. Since late March, five pelicans have been found with their pouches slashed, with the most recent case reported about a week ago. One of the birds died, one recovered and has been released, and the other three are being treated at two wildlife rescue centers. And goes on from there, but let's hope whoever's doing this is caught and dealt with appropriately. Let's just say appropriately, shall we? Now, this is not local, but again, notable, I thought, enough to make it into today's animal news. Comes from Missouri. Missouri House Bill 666. Make your own joke there if you like, especially as you hear the rest of this. Dealing with animal facilities in the state seems to be garnering supporters from as far away as Washington, D.C. George R. Goodnow, Communications Director for National Association of, for Biomedical Research Foundation for Biomedical Research in Washington, D.C., which they may want to rethink the name of the organization, Department of Redundancy Department, perhaps, said that his foundation is in full support of the bill, which would make it a felony for anyone to take unauthorized pictures of an animal facility, as well as punish those who would be labeled, quote, extremists for trying to purposefully damage an animal facility. Quote, Missouri House Bill 666, pause for dramatic effect, is an effort to prohibit persons from trespassing or obtaining images of an animal facility and adds a penalty for the release of a pathogen or disease in or near an animal facility, so you know. It also establishes penalties for anyone who seeks employment at an animal facility with the purpose of gathering information on how the facility operates. The battle between those who raise and use animals in a laboratory research setting and animal rights activists has been ongoing for decades despite legislation such as the Animal Welfare Act, the Guide for the Care and Use of Laboratory Animals, and the U.S. Government Principles for Animal Use Laws enacted to ensure the well-being of any animal used in a research facility. There are currently 35 United States Department of Agriculture certified animal research facilities throughout the state, with 7 being located in St. Louis. And it goes on from there. You can find out more on the internet, I'm sure. But that's some tough legislation there. Sort of in the wake of our guests last week, Jennifer Swanson and Brad Gaver from Pure Thoughts, Full Rescue, I thought I'd read just a little bit of this from Associated Press. 6 wild horses sold by U.S. end up at slaughterhouse is the deadline, so sadly, you probably know where we're going with this. This is from Reno. Wild horses rounded up on a federal land in the West and sold to a private owner have been slaughtered for the first time since a new law went into effect, a government official said Thursday. This is something we regret and are very disappointed this has happened, said Celia Boddington, a spokeswoman for the U.S. Bureau of Land Management in Washington. We make every possible effort when the horses are sold to make sure the animals are placed in good homes for long-term care. The BLM is investigating this month's sale of 6 wild horses to an Oklahoma man and their subsequent slaughter at a commercial packing plant in Illinois, Boddington said. In December, Congress repealed the 34-year-old ban on slaughtering wild horses that ran free across the West. The move has brought a backlash from activists who want to reinstate full protection for the Mustangs. Officials for the Humane Society of the United States learned of the slaughter Thursday and protested to the BLM. Goes on from there. I think that's probably going to do it for now. Hopefully, we may have time later to come back to some of the items ahead of mind. But I just want to let you know that if there are any news stories or announcements, events that you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email again is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And I'm pleased to remind you, even if it's slightly redundant, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site, talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net, and sign up for the email list. We can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of all, just about all the shows, assorted photographs, articles both that we've written and that the various media outlets and others have written about us, and all kinds of links, other audio pieces and more. So please stop by, take a look around the site. Again, it's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. Got one of my favorite comics making his Comedy Corner debut today. This is Paul F. Tompkins with a piece called Alternative Pets on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
People have their alternative pets on their person. People walk around with animals on their body. See a guy that's got an iguana hanging out up there on his shoulder? See another person with a crazy cockatiel just hanging out? And I guess you're supposed to have some reaction to these people. You know, I guess what they want you to say is something like, well, pardon me, sir. Is that a bird on your shoulder? Well, you must be one fascinating individual. Your personality is not at all manufactured. I say, what if we were to exchange addresses and became pen pals? That way I could collect your letters in a bound volume entitled, My Correspondence with the Most Interesting Person Alive. Working hard for you. That's great. You can have any animal that you want, you know, because we have dominion over the beasts of the fields and all, you know, but here's the thing. Even animals need some alone time. Okay? How about that? You know? Maybe the lizard would like to sit at home, play on the rock for a while, you know? Maybe the bird would like to play with the bell, look in the mirror for a little bit. Maybe they don't have to come with you on all your jackass errands. How about that? Leave them alone for a minute. Come on, Cecil, we're going down to the bank so everybody can see your crazy eyes. Woo!
All right, we're listening to a woman named Khaki King, with a piece called All the Landslides Birds Have Seen Since the Beginning of the World. And in the Comedy Corner, that was Paul F. Tompkins with a piece called Alternative Pets, taken from a TV appearance. I think I got it from his Comedy Central special, The Comedy Corner. It's, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI. 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way, and some of you perhaps arrived through our small website, TalkingAnimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that our guest today is Tippi Hedren, the actress perhaps best known for starring in Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, but for more than three decades has operated the Shambhala Preserve, an 80-acre facility in Acton, California, for big cats and other animals as well. And not coincidentally, perhaps, she's also a longtime animal activist, frequently advocating new or stronger legislation to protect wildlife of various kinds, in can hunts, etc. So, and she still does the acting, which we'll get into as well. So there's lots to discuss here as we... Welcome, Tippi Hedren, to Talking Animals. Are you there, Tippi?
I'm here. How are you this morning?
Very well. Thank you so much for joining us on Talking Animals.
Well, it's lovely. It's my favorite subject.
Well, cool. And, you know, I can sort of imagine you may have had your fill of being so strongly identified with the birds, like sort of, you know, give it a rest, will you?
Oh, no. You know something? I love that.
Oh, good.
That, I think it's, I'm extremely lucky, very fortunate to have a film like that in my past. It's wonderful.
Sure, and indeed you're at, but the thing is that's kind of notable too, that we'll get into maybe a bit later too, is that your acting career is still quite active, and which I think is also really fantastic. But right now, I think perhaps if we can touch on how your film work actually many years ago sort of propelled you toward your work with animals, maybe we can sort of find where those dovetail.
Oh,
and
sure.
So and how that came to sort of be on the path to creating Shambhala. So I think, was it Satan's Harvest that sort of was a pivotal moment?
That was, or? It was a film that I did in Africa. I did two films in Africa. And during that time, it was 1969 and 1970.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I wanted to do the films because they both were involved animals.
Sure.
And I desperately wanted to go to that continent.
Mm-hmm.
And, to see the animals, and it was a very exciting time for me. And during that time, environmentalists were saying, if we don't do something right now to save the animals in the wild by the year 2000, they will be gone. So we were hearing a lot about, you know, the animals in the wild. We learned about the plight of the whale, the panda, the tiger, you know, who were diminishing in numbers rapidly, mm-hmm. Along with the animals in Africa. And we'd go to the different game preserves and when we had time off, and it was so beautiful to see the animals. And we just, you know, the animals and the people were literally living together.
Yeah.
I mean, and they have for a millennium. You know, incidentally, that's something that we should try to manage to do with our mountain lion.
Sure.
You know, and the animals out in the wild rather than killing them, you know.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to talk about that and some of your efforts on behalf of that and the legislation. But back then in 1697...
You know, so my then-husband was a producer,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, we decided to join the awareness group. And decided to do a movie about the animals in the wild. And on one of the trips to the Gorongosa Game Preserve in Mozambique, we saw a house that had been abandoned by a game warden because it flooded during the rainy seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And he took off, and the Pride of Lion moved in.
Really?
They literally...
set up shop there.
Yes, they did.
Wow.
And it grew to be the largest pride in all of Africa. So we thought, well, let's do this movie and let's use the big cats as our movie stars. And that's what we did. And there were close to 30 animals living in this house.
And it sounded like even before you went there that you had, that you actually kind of wanted to go there to Africa to sort of further what sounds like already was kind of a real love for animals. I mean, were you an animal person just as a kid from the get-go, it sounds like?
Since I was born, I call it a birth affect.
Okay.
I mean, some of us are born with it, some of us acquire it later in life or whatever, but...
Yeah.
It lends such quality to your life to be interested in animals. It's just so beautiful to get to know another species and find out what they're all about, and you know.
Sure.
I love it.
And so was it that work then, and sort of obviously a lifelong love for animals, was that sort of the path that led to Shambhala, or maybe you could sort of walk us through that?
Well, let me tell you what happened, if I can, very quickly.
Sure, please.
Because of the, you know, huge number of animals living in this house, and we used the house as a centerpiece for our movie about a scientist who was doing a comparative study of the great cat. And so we thought, well, let's use this house, and because it's really funny. It was fascinating to see them.
Mm-hmm.
They were sitting in the windows, lying around on the verandas, going in and out the doors. I mean, one was sitting in a dilapidated old porch swing. It was, it was charming.
Yeah.
So, but you couldn't get near that house. So in dealing with, there were 28 to 29, 30 big cats living in this house, all sizes, cubs to the big Maine lions. And so it was so interesting, and we decided to use the big cat as our... But we didn't know anything about this sort of thing, about the animals.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know anything about big cats, other than aren't they beautiful, and aren't they could be dangerous, charming, loving, whatever.
Sure.
And... So that's the way the script was written. Well, we got to Hollywood, and we had full intentions of using Hollywood acting animals, have a 9-month shoot over and out. And we started interviewing the lions to do the movie, and as soon as the trainers read the script, they just laughed at us and said, you can't do this because of instinctual dictates to fight. They didn't want their cat hurt.
Mm.
They didn't want to be hurt.
Hmm.
And so they said, get your own animals. Therein lies the, you know, how the whole thing started. And the first one was a rescue,
mm-hmm.
and from then on down.
So that was really like, hey, get your own animals was, mm-hmm. in a sense, if you had to really reduce it down, was really kind of then the impetus for Shambhala.
Yes, and that's how it started, because after the movie, which is called Roar,
mm-hmm.
R-O-A-R, was finished, we had over 100 big cats here. And
wow.
It was... Well,
wasn't
it
a
home.
And if I'm not mistaken, Tippy, didn't that span like 5 years, that shoot of war?
It was our 9-month shoot took 5 years.
Yeah. Because it dealt with animals because of the complications inherent in that, you mean? Or
it was, well we had accidents with the animals.
Mm-hmm.
We had the leaves would fall off the trees because everything has to match.
Right, right.
And we'd run out of money, and we had a flood that stopped us for a year. A 10-foot wall of water came through.
Oh, my goodness.
Up in the mountains.
So once you finally did get through that chute, then you had acquired these animals. So then it was like, hey, well, here, I guess, is what we're going to do. We're going to keep people here and care for them and rescue others. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about Denshawn. I mean, that was 30-plus years ago, I guess, right?
Yeah, we started. Our first little rescue was in 1970, 71.
Mm.
And we bought this property in 1972. And we started the movie in 76.
Wow.
So we had all that time to rescue animals.
Sure.
And that's literally what we came of.
Yeah.
All the different fish and games from all over the United States. The Department of Agriculture were calling us to take animals. Humane societies, SPCAs. But the common, you know, circus, older circus animals.
Sure.
Excess zoo animals.
Wow. So, Tippi, I have a couple more questions, but it looks like someone... might have a question from a caller. Would you like to take one of those?
Oh, sure.
Sure. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI. It's Talking Animals with Tippi Hedren.
Hi there. Ms. Hedren, a huge admirer of your work on screen and, of course, with animals. I was just wondering, do you still rescue big cats? Like, do you still get contacted about situations and stuff?
Yes, we do. In fact, it is so... The whole problem is so enormous that about 6 years ago we formed the American Sanctuary Association, which is an accreditation association that accredits sanctuaries. And in order to be a sanctuary, you have to have no breeding, no buying, no selling, no trading, no commercial use outside the city limits, adequate veterinary care, not just an 8x10 cage, but habitats that are right for that animal, and the list goes on. So there are so many animals that need a home that no one sanctuary can handle it all, but at the same time, you want to make sure that that animal is going to a place that's, you know, good and safe for them. So, yes, we do, and it's just as bad as it was 30 years ago, and that's why I'm trying to get legislation passed.
Wow. Thank you very much. And good luck with your work.
Look us up on our website, Shambhala.org.
I certainly will. Thanks.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, and I will a few more times. But, yeah, that's a really great website. It covers so much ground, and including some of the legislation stuff that we'll get into. But let me just let all the listeners know, if you just tune in, it's Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm speaking with Tippi Hedren, mostly, so far at least, about Shambhala and her work with big cats and other animals. So if you would like to ask a question, as that caller just did, it's 949-824-5824 to join us here. So Tippi, can you tell us just a little bit about Shambhala today? Like, how many animals are there? What kinds? And I know, as you already started to allude to, they've arrived there through various means. So maybe you could talk maybe just about a few of the animals that have come there through different circumstances. Zoos, people that are insane enough to have tigers as pets, etc.
Yeah, well, that's where they come from.
The common
denominator through all this is unfortunately the private citizen who acquires a little lion cub or a tiger cub or, you know, a little serval, which is the most popular exotic animal right now to be used as a pet. And they're not, no wild animal is a pet. And they shouldn't be a pet, whether it's a little squirrel in your backyard or a Siberian tiger. Wild animals are not geared to live in people's homes or in captivity. You can never give them what they need, the life that they need. It is impossible to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I believe that these, you know, all of the exotic cats that are being sold as pets should not even be born in the United States. It's so hard on them. It is just awful. It's expensive. It's dangerous for the human. And there is nothing, not one good thing about it.
Yeah.
You know, it breaks my heart to have these animals in compounds. Fortunately, they're large. Some of them are an acre or more.
Mm-hmm.
and we make sure that the tigers have water to play in.
Yeah.
And the nicest thing we do for them is we move them around from one compound to another about every 3 or 4 weeks, so they have a change of.
Keeps it stimulating and interesting. That's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I want to come back to some things about Shambhala, but that makes me ask about too, because I mean, in recent months in particular, it seems like big cats have just popped up. On the news, the tiger that was wandering around Simi Valley, the trial and thank God guilty verdicts of the guy who ran Tiger Rescue, which we've talked a lot about here on Talk Animals, and we've had Chuck Tracy on, and just the continuing reports of the morons who do have tigers and other big cats as pets, and something of course always goes awry, and then these so-called sanctuaries. I mean, that's great about your ASA thing there, but I mean, there's so many so-called sanctuaries.
It's really awful. The pseudo sanctuary.
Yeah, I mean, scamptuaries, I think, is one of the things that comes up a lot.
And fact that John Weinhart called it Tiger Rescue.
Yeah.
And the press is calling it a sanctuary. That was not a sanctuary.
Yeah, this we're referring, by the way, to the Tiger Rescue case in Colton. I'm just making sure.
Yeah, I've testified against John Weinhart.
Yeah, and good for you, because we've been out there and helped volunteer and had Chuck Tracy on, and that guy, it's the semantics that people use, because, like you said, it's so wily of him to call it Tiger Rescue, and you think, hey, that's great, doing great work.
I went out there 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Because as president of the American Sanctuary, it is our job to look at, I'm sorry for all these beeps on the phone here.
Well, you're a popular gal. Yeah.
But it is our job to go and look at different places to see if they could join us.
Sure.
In helping with rescuing animals. And I went out there, and first of all, when we parked the car, we got out of the car and you could smell it.
Mm.
Which is pretty indicative that it's not going to be good. I walked through, and it was like somebody had put a bunch of cages in a dump.
Mm-hmm.
It was so bad. And
inside
the cages, there were feces and feathers and carcasses and bodies of dead animals, green with mold, and I mean
some of it was so bad it had liquefied the bodies and carcasses. I mean, we don't need to get that much more graphic, but I'm just saying that. But that's a perfect example, and the thing that, like you said, you visited there 6 years ago. This only came down 2+3 years ago.
That's right.
And the thing I wonder about, whether it's Tiger Rescue or insert name of other similar place here. I mean, how can legislation be tightened up? Because I know people get inspected, right? Those people were visited by officials.
Well, let me tell you, Fish and Game is the department that was supposed to take care of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
There are something like 300 and some facilities that take care of it, that have animals in them, and they're supposed to inspect every year.
Mm-hmm.
Only 13 were inspected this year.
Mm.
I mean, there's major, major work that needs to be done with Fish and Game, and there's a bill that's going to be coming out very, very soon that hopefully legislation will be fixing that.
Yeah, yeah.
And making demands on the Department of Fish and Game. But that place the Tiger Rescue should never have been called a sanctuary.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like an Auschwitz.
Yeah, no, it was so awful and extreme. But I mean, there's the sad thing is there's plenty of tiger rescues, around. I mean, a couple weeks ago there was a pet expo right out here where I am in Costa Mesa at the fairgrounds, and so we're walking around having a nice time, and then we come upon this place that is set up outside a booth area, and it's a so-called, well, I'm not going to say the name necessarily, but it's a sanctuary, and there's a tiger sitting there.
And that is not sanctuary when you take those animals.
No. But
off
that's
the place.
Right, but that's what they're calling it. That's what they were presenting themselves as answering questions, handing out brochures, talking about shows that they provide. Mm-hmm. I was just outraged, and I just thought,
Did you tell them that?
Well, I wanted to actually talk to the pet expo people, which I still will, because I don't know if it does much good to talk to the guy that owns the sanctuary and is probably proud to have a tiger sitting there in a cage. But somebody needs to step in, and then I've seen on some of these listservs that I'm on, people are actually trying to help this organization. in because they think it's another tiger rescue. Well, I don't know that they should be helped. They should be probably shut down.
They should adhere to the laws and stop it. Just
absolutely. So what can we do as animal lovers to either help with getting the message out, supporting legislation?
What should we support the legislation.
Yeah.
And that is how the Captive Wildlife Safety Act that I worked on in 2003, and that is basically how that happened, because people wrote to their congressmen, they wrote to their senators, and really insisted. I mean, we really just harassed Congress.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a hearing and spoke to the committee, and they finally heard us.
Yeah.
I listed about 15 different accidents, starting out with a little 4.5-year-old boy who had his arm ripped off by a tiger, his uncle's pet tiger, and a little 11-year-old girl who was brought into the tiger's cage to groom the tiger, and he jumped her and bit her in the neck, and she was instantly dead.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just inevitable, isn't it? You know
what it's like? It's like if you put a loaded pistol on your coffee table.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe nobody will pick it up, but boy, there's sure that opportunity.
Absolutely.
Well, it's
and
there isn't a single reason for anybody to want to have a lion or a tiger as a pet.
And this might be an interesting opportunity or sort of transition to. Do you want to talk at all about the lion freedom and kind of the situation surrounding that? Because
that was the most peculiar situation.
Mm-hmm.
Al Gore, who was at the time a writer for the New York Post, called me and said, "Tippie, I want to do an article, an in-depth piece on just how easy it is to buy a lion or a tiger. And I want to go and do this, but I want to do it responsibly. Would you take that animal? Would you rescue it?" And I said yes, because at that time I was working on the legislation.
Sure.
So he went into Ohio, which is prevalent for raising, these animals to be sold as pets. And with the tigers, they don't care whether, they'll say that, we're helping an endangered species. They don't care whether they breed the Sumatran to the Bengal to the Siberian. They don't care as long as they get those cubs. The zoos call them mutts. They won't even take them.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he went into Ohio to purchase a little animal, and he said he wanted a little lion or a tiger, and the man came back with an 8-day-old lion that he took from his mother.
Mm.
And so Al paid Al and Bill Long. Bill Long was the one who bought the animal, and he paid $1,000 for it. And incidentally, you can buy them for hundreds of dollars. I saw an ad in the internet that for a tiger, year-old female, for $24,000.
Mm.
So you can, pay whatever you're
sucker
enough to do.
Right, the market will there.
Yeah. So anyway, I said 8 days old, that little animal is too young to travel. There is a place that is asking to become a member of ASA, the American Sanctuary Association. Take it over to her and see if she'll take care of it for several weeks till it gets a little older.
Mm-hmm. And more in position to make that trip, basically, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so they took it over there, and she put a whole different spin on it. She reamed them for, taking this little animal.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, what he was doing was rescuing it.
Sure.
And not just letting it go to somebody who wouldn't know how to take care of it. And she wouldn't let it go. She took the animal and they wouldn't let it go.
Mm-hmm.
So it was. It went into litigation.
Right, and sort of a misguided attempt to do the right thing.
And,
yeah.
And I was thinking how sad it was that she didn't join this effort, because it could have been a monumental. Look how easy this is. It was just sad. It was
that was the whole premise of his article, to call attention to this, and he was smart enough and responsible enough to say, okay, if I play out this story the way I think it will, I'm going to end up with a tiger or a lion. So he contacted you in advance saying, hey, if that happens, so everything was, but now that if I'm not mistaken, that lion does live at Shambhala, right?
Oh, yes, he's here,
yeah.
And he's, what, he's 17 months old now.
Yeah.
And he's living with a darling little tigress who has been spayed, so there'll be no little ligers
okay.
born.
Yeah.
And they're happy as they're just really. Very, very nice for both of them.
Well, that's great. And Tippi, we're probably just nearing the end of our time here. But let me just ask, I mean, they're probably, given what goes on at Shambhala and the variables, there's probably no such thing as an average day there. But can you walk us through what might happen on any random day, like what happened yesterday or Friday or what's likely to happen to today, just so we get more of a sense
First of all, every animal is checked. To you know, make sure they're healthy,
mm-hmm.
That there weren't any fights during the night. They, you know, they have little arguments every now and then, and with those teeth, they can, you know, they can hurt each other.
Sure.
So we check every animal, and at night I listen. If there are any arguments, I listen to approximately where it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And
because we should point out, you live right there on the ground.
I am surrounded by them.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear them roar all night, and also hear the arguments.
Yeah.
Which is completely different sounds. And so we check every animal to make sure they're healthy. Then the animals are fed, and any animal that needs medication is made. We make sure that that's done.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a cleaning of the preserve starts.
Mm-hmm.
On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have school groups that come. Because on our safari days, which is 1 weekend a month, and the first Saturday of every month, the adopted wild parents can come.
Mm-hmm.
Those days we take the students on tour, and we keep them together like little bunches of asparagus, you know, and walk them around and teach them about the animals. And,
sure.
And always make sure they understand that wild animals are not pets.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tremendous amount of work when we move the animals, you know, because that's a very exacting time. And it's fun for the animals. They
sure.
love that.
I mean, when you rotate them from...
Yeah,
from,
they love
yeah,
doing
yeah.
that.
And how many animals are there at the moment, Tippi?
We have 70.
Uh-huh.
70. We have 69 in the preserve, and one is in quarantine right now.
And how many of those were big cats of one kind or another?
Well, we have lion,
mm-hmm.
Tiger,
mm-hmm.
Leopard,
mm-hmm.
spotted and black,
mm-hmm.
Servals, lynx, bobcat, a little jungle cat, mountain lion,
mm-hmm.
a lot. I mean, those are divided into, you know, we have a tremendous number of tiger and a tremendous number of lions.
Sure.
And we have an African elephant.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's
there
all these different species, and we try to, you know, make them happy.
Sure.
What they want. They have, the lions and tigers have high rises that they can climb up on and overlook everybody, which
mm-hmm.
they love to do.
I'm sure.
And
yeah.
they get in the trees, which is beautiful to see.
Yeah.
And, all the mountain lions and leopards have high rises in their compounds also, so that they can get up, because they love to be up. All of them like to be up high.
Up, elevated. Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Yeah.
And
they have toys. They have boomer balls, which are very, very thick plastic.
Mm.
And the lions and tigers have the great big ones. They're almost 20 inches in diameter.
Wow.
And big. And then our cats have balls, and they have logs to play with, and
mm-hmm.
you know, we kind of keep trying.
They're
to
really stimulated.
Natural.
Yeah, yeah, sounds like it. And I want to remind our listeners again that the website is shambhala.org, shambhala.org, and not only can you learn more about what we've talked about here, but unfortunately, we're probably not going to have time to talk about some of the legislation that Tippi alluded to earlier. But there are some things pending, including trophy hunting of mountain lions.
Yeah, and that's a real big one.
Yeah, it's really important. It's AB 24, but to get more information. One of the places you could go for that and other reasons is shambhala.org. And And I guess also just quickly, because we started off this way, I want to mention, too, that people may not be as aware, although some I'm sure are, that you're still quite active in the acting realm with, seems like, a number of films recently, and some that haven't come out yet. I guess
yes.
Strike the Tent, I don't know if that's...
Strike the Tent and also Ice Maker.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Plus you were in I Love Huckabees or I Heart Huckabees.
Yeah, I don't know if I Heart Huckabees is still in the theaters, but it's...
No, but I mean, it was
very
recent, and so it seems like there's a lot going on. And lastly, also you'll find out if you visit shawnbala.org, the perfect, P-U-R-R, perfect, Kitty of the Year contest. You might want to find out more about that, which is kind of a neat thing.
Yeah, I'm not eligible. My kitties aren't eligible,
I'm sure.
But my kitties would have won.
Yeah, of course. That'd be a little fixed.
But it's a really fun thing. Look that up.
Yeah.
And also our membership and Adopt a Wild One program.
Yeah, there's all kinds of ways
program.
You can help and
lots
support.
Of stuff.
Right.
Yes.
And one last quick sort of more trivial thing, perhaps, but how do you know Matthew Sweet, or do you know Matthew Sweet?
Matthew Sweet.
Do you or do you not? Because the reason I ask is that we have some animal songs during each week's show, and I particularly started this one with a song called "The Big Cats of Shambhala" by a singer songwriter guitarist named Matthew Sweet, and I just didn't know if you guys had any connection, or he was just moved to write that song just from a distance, or what. But
no, now that you put it in together for me, yes, of course, it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's a lovely tribute.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Well, Tippi Hedren, thank you so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals. Again, we want to urge people to go to shambhala.org and find out more, including that if you play your cards right, you can actually visit Shambhala and find out more about it. But in the meantime, you can find out a lot of information and find out ways to help her efforts and support Shambhala.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
So thank you very, very much, Tippi. We appreciate it. Okay, good
thank
luck to you.
For
thanks
doing
again.
This show. It's wonderful.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. All right, take care now. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, again, thanking Tippi Hedren for joining us today on Talking Animals. And one last time, the website is shambhala.org. It's time for Name That Animal Tune. I think you can already probably gather what's happening. If you can identify this tune, it's an animal-related, at least by virtue of title. Call in 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, and you would have your choice of those prizes that we mentioned earlier when we did the news quiz. So I'm Duncan Strauss. We have just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily... Well, maybe we have somebody here, I'm guessing. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI. Ooh. Huh? All right, too bad. Well, maybe they'll call back. Anyway, I have just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, University of California Board of Regents. Want to again thank our guest, Tippi Hedren. One last time, our facility is Shambhala, the Shambhala Preserve. Website is shambhala.org. Also want to thank you all for listening and for the cool phone call question we received. Hope you'll join us next Monday, May 2nd, when our guest will be Bo Rinald, the co-author of the Vegan World Fusion Cuisine, a just gorgeous and fantastic new vegan cookbook packed with just all kinds of great recipes and information and resources beyond that, and a fantastic special foreword by Dr. Jane Goodall. So, very cool. So, that's next Monday, May 2nd. And I think we're going to skip over some of this other stuff since we're starting to run a little behind. But please check out the website, talkinganimals.net. And sign up for our email list if you can. We'll keep you posted on stuff and make any suggestions you might have about the show or topics or guests or animal songs, animal comedy bits at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I really look forward to hearing from you. I do. So please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, his great, great blues show here on KUCI. This has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're closing things out here with an animal-related tune. This is Echo and the Bunnymen with a song called Bedbugs and Ballyhoo on KUCI. We'll catch you next week on Talking Animals. Ballyhoo! Rumble. Down on your knees.
Thank you.